Hey, it's a pleasure to have you with me. It's a pleasure to have footy to watch and loving every second of what we're getting dished up right now. Last night was magnificent. Can't wait for tonight. Port Adelaide and the Bulldogs from the Adelaide Oval. Terry Wallace has been good enough to join me for a McCafe coffee catch-up. Never miss a single goal with McDelivery available via the Uber Eats app. Welcome to you, Terry. Great to have you on.
G'day, Dwayne. How are you going? And, it was certainly a fantastic finish to the weekend, wasn't it? Not that the game started that well, the Fremantle-Collingwood game, but by the end it had us all riveted and good calling.
Thanks, Terry. I was interested to hear Justin Longmuir say that he thought they won the first quarter even though they didn't kick a goal.
Yeah, I heard you question him on that, and I think that's spot on. I mean, you set yourself tasks or targets when you're coaching, and obviously with Collingwood being so good early, that obviously one of their tasks would be to be right in the hunt at quarter time, and that's certainly that. I mean, one goal 2-0 wasn't too breathtaking for us at home, but when you're sitting in the coach's box, I mean, that's exactly what he would have wanted. And that sort of messaging that you get to your players, it grows self-belief. So when you go in a quarter time and you can say, okay, that's what we set out to do, and this is exactly the result that we wanted, the belief starts to grow within your group, and particularly when you've got, a young core group like the Fremantle side is at the moment. So, I personally think of the two sides at quarter time, there would have been more spring in the step in Fremantle's huddle than what there would have been in Collingwood's.
So they've still got a chance to get it going because they've got three of the bottom four teams right now. Adelaide in Adelaide, Melbourne at the Gabba, I think they've got one other team, Sydney at the Gabba as well, off a short break this coming Thursday. So they can get it going. But are you worried about Collingwood right now, Terry?
I am, because there's quite a few of those the good players that either won't be back or won't virtually be back until finals are upon us. So that's makes it more difficult. There are still some real genuine issues. I mean, I thought this was one that was lost at the selection table on the weekend. How you drop Roughhead after sort of one poor game, and all of a sudden Matt Tabata runs around like he's the greatest key position superstar that's ever played the game. I just couldn't understand why they would have gone in like that. And it cost them, and in the end, probably just about cost them the game. So that was disappointing. But look, they've got some work to do. There's no doubt that they've got some work to do. I think that they're good enough to compete in finals, but they want to do a lot of things right between now and then.
This zone situation as opposed to a matchup situation, how are you reading the evolution of our game there?
Well, it's the zoning has just become the way of the world, isn't it? I mean, once upon a time you had a few sides like the Sydney Swans who continued to go down a one-on-one path, but you just can't compete. I mean, the biggest thing that I think comes into play is decision-making and ball use. I mean, the decision-making and ball use is so much more difficult with the zone structures and trying to pinpoint your way through a grid, particularly when you've got sides who are putting good pressure on. I did St Kilda and Sydney on the weekend, and I thought St Kilda's forward line pressure was magnificent, and it was just making it almost impossible for Sydney to step out of half back. Yeah, where they've got some really nice players like Lloyd and Rampy, obviously Mills, out of that area, but the pressure was so good and the grid structure up the ground was so predominant that they just kept giving it back to the Saints, and then the Saints were eventually going to hurt them on the scoreboard. That's how it played out. But the sharper sides are the ones, and I've gone all the way to me now. Structure beats personnel. Back when we played, Dwayne, if you had the best 20 players, normally you won the game of footy and you won the premiership if you had the absolute best 20 in the competition. Most times that played out. Not always. Sometimes you have the grand final day and there's an upset. But more often than not, personnel beat structure back in our time. Now, you cannot tell me that structure isn't the king of our game. And I thought Richmond showed out on the weekend. They got 10 players under 30 games and yet they can still get a really solid result against, you know, what's considered a capable side. And it just shows to me that, to me, I still think that Damien Hardwick's the best coach going around right as we stand at the moment. I know the record says that it's Clarko, but I'm talking about now. I'm not talking about past history. Clarkson obviously is the best coach in this this era. But right where we stand at the moment, Hardwick and his coaching personnel are the best organised. I think they're, you know, structurally the best organised in the competition. And that's why I still have them right up in my calculations, because, you know, if they can do what they're doing at the moment with 10 players under 30 games, let's see what they do when, you know, they get a full complement of players to be able to select from with the same structural systems in place.
So how important is it going forward then, Terry, to have that link up with your reserves team or your VFL team or whatever we call this team that we're going to have under your main team? Because you talk about Richmond structure, they've had their own reserves team. They bring in guys like Markov and Arts who have been playing under that system in their reserves. So when they come in, they know the structure.
Yeah, it's critical. And I mean, you know, I was a part of Richmond when we were with Coburg at that particular time. And, you know, we were desperate back then to, number one, have our own ground, a la Punt Road, which the Tigers now have. And number two, we always were desperately seeking, and we just didn't have the funds at the time. But eventually, you know, that was the aim of the board and the management, you know, right from back then, was to eventually be able to put your own VFL side in place. And it's just shone through for the Tigers, hasn't it? Ed Malesi-Smith's another one. But yeah, the three that really interest me that have come through that group, you know, premiership players in that group, Bolter, Chole and Bolton, I think that all three of those at the moment actually look like they're in the best 22 for Richmond, which makes match committee just absolutely fascinating when we get, you know, the likes of Hooley and Edwards and, you know, a few others back in. Asprey is another one that comes to mind straight away, back into the lineup. I mean, you know, gee, they'll have some nice headaches, but some really big headaches at match committee, just sort of aligning what is their best and what's not. Because what I think Bolter and Chole and Bolton have added is a bit of desperation as well. You know, you can have a really good team, you can have a real good structure, but you also need guys who are really hungry to be a part of it. And, you know, those three guys have sort of sensed that their opportunities now, and they've taken it up.
Yeah, haven't got a premiership yet. If you were picking the All-Australian team, who'd be your ruckman right now, Terry?
I knew you'd come with this one. I've been listening to most of the show, I must say. And I'll give you some numbers just to justify it. I'll go on to Luke Goldie to last. But most people have always sort of said Grundy and Gawn are the one, or are the two, I should say. What is the role of a ruckman? What do you want your ruckman to be? So, on the weekend, Collingwood won the hitouts 51-28, yet they lost the clearances by 15, 30-45. Go back to the preliminary final last year. They won the hitouts 78-16, yet lost the clearances by 19, 35-54. So what do you want your ruckman to be? Okay, Grundy, magnificent around the ground, adds linkage to all that he does. But it's not turning into effective work from clearance. And effective work from clearance is one of the most important. That's your one advantage that you get, where you can get clean ball inside your forward 50. We're talking about the zones. No zones in place when you've got that absolute clearance, and particularly the centre clearance.
Yeah, so then you six ahead of the ball, so you can get into correct, a situation where you've got six on six.
Correct. And you go to Maxi Gawn. Round 8, 44 hitouts to 18. Clearances, they lost by 13, once again. Last week, or this week, weekend, Port, 44-13, Max Gawn's favour. They won the clearance by 1. So it's not turning into the advantage. The hit-out advantage is not turning into a clearance advantage with those guys. Nick Nat doesn't have the same dominant numbers. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't win 44-12. He wins by a margin, just, you know, like, let's call it 35-30. But his 30 are just unbelievably good, and his players just feed off it so much. And you only got to go back to the start of that game. They kicked a 16-second goal in that game. And it was Matt Nui flip over the top around, a wrap around to Shuey, who gives it to Kelly, who gives it to Josh Kennedy, goal in 16 seconds. They run, their midfield runs with so much confidence, having Nick that, who pushes the ball to the outside of the pack and allows them to turn inside football into outside football. He makes players better. So the answer to me is I would go for Nick Nat. Now, sitting there and putting the other bloke into the equation, and that's the bloke who plays for North Melbourne, Todd Goldstein, if Geelong were offering a five-year contract at the time, I thought, that's a bit steep for a bloke of his age. Now, they'd love to have him now. There's no doubt about that. He's doing a magnificent job. I think he's absolutely sensational. He's mopping up his own work, the number one clearance player in the competition. But I still think Nick Nat makes the blokes around him better than any of the other rucks.
Yeah, not just the first one of the game either. The game winner when he palmed it to Kennedy in that forward line.
In
what was an amazing little bit of tap ruck work. What did you make of the Carlton Hawthorn performance?
Very pleased for Hawthorn because where they were and the week before I did their game against the Swans and they were terrible. You couldn't put it any other way. They really were very, very poor. They were a long, long way away from their best. You started to sort of think that it might have been past them and where were they going? To be five goals down and then be able to methodically turn that around, 31 points down to 31 points in front, that was a really good effort. But you start to have to also wonder about the Blues. I mean, under David Teague now, there's 13 times, he's coached them for 20 games. In 13 of those 20 games, they've conceded 30-point swings on the scoreboard. So there's got to be a reason why that's happening. I mean, the week before, Dwayne, if you recall when they played North Melbourne, they were just completely controlling that game. And then all of a sudden, it just flipped on its head and they let North Melbourne back in. Now, they found a way to win, but you can't be in these positions where the best and the worst is so far apart for them at the moment. So that's something that the Blues have got to get right. I've sort of said all along, I think they're on the right tram, but that these swings in games are really hurting them. So that's something that they'll need to deal with.
Terry Wallace with us. Great to have the Plough with us for a McCafe coffee catch-up. Never miss a single goal with McDelivery, available via the Uber Eats app. We'll talk about tonight's game and Terry's, I'll spew up straight after the break.
I don't know about you guys. If I see one bloke walk out of here getting a pat on the back from people out there for a good effort, I'll spew up.
Who's your spew up this week, Terry?
Well, Dwayne, senior coaching, it's a damn tough gig, particularly when you're just starting, you're learning on the job. So spare a thought for Adelaide's Matthew Nix. Now, last week, they lost the game by 3 points when they kicked 1-6 in the last quarter where they could have actually got their first victory. This week, they played a team without key senior players and a team that had lost 6 games straight. It was meant to be their real opportunity, yet they had the highest score of the season kicked against them and had a thumping 69-point loss. Now for Nix, that's his first 9 games and 9 losses in a row. Other recent coaches to do the same thing are Mark Neal, which didn't end really great. But the positive for him is Damien Hardwick lost his first 9 games. He's now a dual premiership coach. And Brett Ratten also lost his first 9 games and is still coaching. So maybe he can have perhaps a look at that. Dwayne, if you and the listeners are wondering if Nix is heading for a record, spare a thought for Fitzroy legend Kevin Murray. He coached Fitzroy in 1963 and 1964. His record, 0-34. He never, ever won a single game as a coach of the Fitzroy Football Club. That'll be enough to make you spew up.
Absolutely. Nice one, Terry. At least he's got a Brownlow medal to wear around his neck,
correct,
if not a premiership medal, and he never takes it off. Yeah, 1964 was the last time a team went without a win for the entire season, that Fitzroy season. So They've got Melbourne this week, Wednesday. Then they've got Collingwood, the Bulldogs and Richmond. Geelong, Carlton, Giants and Hawthorn, the teams they've got left to play. Gee, if they get Melbourne without Max Gawn this Wednesday, that's going to be their best chance to win a game, surely, between now and the end of the year.
Absolutely. Look, I'd be still tipping Melbourne. I thought they would... I got asked probably a month ago, would they win a game? And they should have won that game against Essendon a week ago. But I thought that they would. I thought playing at home, getting somebody who had been a little bit off in hub life or had quite a few players missing, I thought they'd pinch one. But when you actually have a look at who they've lost to, and as you've done, and just pointed out there, gee, it's starting to get really difficult to see where they'll actually get that win from. So I'm starting to think that they could be a side that goes through without a win.
Especially if they do need guys with operations and with two games left, put guys in cotton wool, start thinking about 2020, don't play Bryce, 2021, don't play guys like Bryce Gibbs, so get more games into their kids. And yeah, it's a worry. You don't want to be the coach that takes a team to the first ever AFL winless season. What do you think will happen tonight, Terry? Let's talk about a positive. Should be a good game tonight, Port and the Dogs, even though Port Adelaide will start the favourites at the Adelaide Oval.
Yeah, looking for a bounce back from the Bulldogs, whether that means they win or just a really solid performance. But I expect them to bounce back pretty hard. I'm loving Port's kids. I mean, I know it's now sort of 18 months that we've been on this, but they just are inspiring. Rosie, Butters, Dersma, Marshall, I like too. I mean, I know he's out injured at the moment, but now they've added Georgiades to the mix as well. And gee, he looks an impressive young man, and he looks like a serious player for the future for them. So Bulldogs, they want to do better. I just wanted to give you a stat, Dwayne, on who I call Mr. Consistent for the Bulldogs, and that's Jack McRae. He had 37 possessions in that loss the other night, and some people always look for what you can or what you can't do over what you can do. And some people say, well, does he hurt you as much? And that's always the comments with the Crouch boys as well, and many others. Clayton Oliver, you could put into that lot, but it's so difficult to be racking up that type of possession week in, week out, week in. And that was his 150th game on the weekend. And I only saw this stat over the weekend that in 150 games, Jack McRae, at 107 times, has had 25-plus possessions in 150 games. So that's more than two out of every three. When you consider your first 15, 20 games, you're learning on the job, and then you consider taggers and things like that, a day where you're just a bit off, you've got the flu, or you're not feeling 100%. That's a magnificent record, 107 times 25-plus possessions in 150 games. So he surely has to be one of the most consistent players in this competition.
Yeah, nice call. This round runs from, it's a midweek round, so it runs from tonight till Friday. I want to go through the whole round with you, but can I just jump to Friday quickly? Essendon and the Giants, your thoughts on where the Giants are? Giants are just inside the eight. Essendon's just outside. There's some pretty big games coming up, but I wanted to probe you on the Giants.
Obviously, Toby Green going out doesn't help them, does it? But they really do confuse me, the Giants. I mean, they're one of the most bewildering sides in this competition because you have a look at the personnel that they've got, the high-end personnel, and you've got absolute stars and they're right at the right age. And then you look at, we were talking about style of play before. You look at their style of play, and the two factors in their style of play are so contradictory to each other, it's ridiculous. So they are the number one team in the competition at, once they enter 50, at being able to score from entries. So every time they basically get it in there, they get a score. But they're number 17 in the competition at being able to get the ball inside 50. So the two, you just think, even if they were mid-range at being able to get the ball inside forward 50, with that sort of potency once it's in there, you think that they would be right up the pointy end of the competition. But you can't be if you're only getting it in there so little amount of time. So that's the contradictory. I still sit there and go, if they can tweak a couple of things where they average out about the same amount of inside 50s as what their opposition do every week, they'll be winning. With that high-end ability to be able to score once they get it in there, if they can just balance that out a little bit, you know, they could get on a roll and really start winning. But, you know, we've played now 9 games and they haven't been able to do that on a consistent basis. So, they are a contradiction.
And the match of the round might actually be tomorrow night. We've talked about tonight a little bit, but Richmond and the Lions is a ripper tomorrow night, Metricon.
Brilliant game. Absolutely brilliant game. And I'd say one thing for Brisbane Lions supporters, and I know that I sort of said structure overrides personnel, but to me, if you can't beat them now, and I know you got a couple out yourself, Brisbane, but if you can't beat them now, I don't know how you're going to beat them when the cavalry come back in for Richmond. I'll be picking Richmond because I still go structure over personnel. I was up there at the Gabba when they got them and got them fairly solidly last year in that final. Brisbane could have been a bit closer if they kicked straight, but certainly Richmond got hold of them in the end. So I just think I'll be going Richmond, but it's a big one for Brisbane to sort of show that they've bridged a little bit of that gap.
Cats and North?
I've been impressed with the Cats. Once upon a time, everyone sort of, they only get the finals because they play down at Geelong so often and other sides can't handle it. And they're only there off the back of sort of Selwood, Dangerfield and Amlett. Well, two of them are not running around at the moment. That game on Saturday night was that far superior to the rest of the games on the weekend. And credit needs to be given to Geelong. You know, they haven't had it easy either. They've had players sort of, you know, missing. The beautiful thing that happened for them was getting Duncan and Stewart back exactly when Ablett and Selwood went out of the side. So at least to balance things off, you know, if you had the four of them out, I mean, Stewart's first half was sensational. And, you know, his ability to read and intercept the ball and sort of set them up, he's the architect that back line for them, and Duncan's come back in like he hasn't missed a beat. North were much better. It's amazing, isn't it? The magic door of motion, the ripping out of a couple of key players from the lineup, and just sort of saying, you know, we're going to just go with, and I'm not sort of begrudging anything or anyone, but we're just going to go with the hard and raw emotional side of things. It worked beautifully for them, and they played, you know, some really good football. So well done to them. I think Geelong's a much, much bigger step up, obviously, than what they met on the weekend. So I think Geelong will beat them, but it was much better from the Kangaroos.
And also playing across this midweek round, the Gold Coast Suns have a habit of starting seasons well, but then dropping off. We don't expect them to drop off quite as much this season, but they could, if they lose to St Kilda, they'll drop to 4-6. A pretty big game as well for both clubs.
Yeah, it is. And, I think they've made improvement. I mean, how much improvement, that's always debatable. You know, we'll get to the end of the year before we sort of start to analyse all that. But I certainly think that they've improved. Their games are far more watchable than what they've been in the past. But I still think St Kilda is, you know, a step ahead of them. But I think St Kilda are a danger team for anyone who thinks that they can win it. They're healthy. Their belief is growing as the season's going on. They're playing better and better football. They score quickly. So, you know, I mean, you're playing them and you're a decent side in this competition. I mean, St Kilda got the ability to kick, you know, 3-4 goals just bang, bang, bang like that. And, you know, that makes them really dangerous. And the other thing that I really like that they've done, Dwayne, with the Saints is the... we heard Clarko speak the other day about, you know, you just can't go to the draft and just do it all through draft. You know, it's got to be a combination. Well, Saints have got that combination right. You go their high-end draft picks, who are their really good young kids who are coming through and playing some great footy. King high-end, Billings high-end, Hunter Clark high-end, Caulfield high-end, Gresham first-round draft pick. Plus, on the balance of that, they've traded in 9 players that played on the weekend from opposition clubs, and that Dan Hannanbury didn't play on the weekend. There's another one. But so it's a nice balance between developing your own and seeing your own grow and blossom and become better along the journey and adding in from opposition clubs as well. So I think they've got that balance really, really good at the moment. So they're a danger side, and I think they'll be too strong for Gold Coast.
Going to get Terry's coaches' votes, his MEGT Rookie of the Year votes shortly. We'll get his footy golf as well. The Daniel Andrews press conference, we're told, is 3:15 today, so it'll be outside my window of opportunity to bring it to you, but That's what time it's set down for. Terry Wallace sticking around. Hey, before we go to the break, player Jake Carlisle, $500 fine for, well, he missed Dane Rampey's hand, luckily for him, perhaps.
Yeah, well, I was involved, I was coaching when Stephen Crediuk went after the hand of Matthew Lloyd going back about 20 years ago. And look, it's just not a good look for the competition. I can assure you the coaches don't tell him to go out and belt his hand, but it's just not a good look for the competition. I would have gone a bit harder. I know he didn't get him properly, but I would have gone a bit harder just because I just don't think we want that sort of look. You know, your kids follow the game. If you know, if you send a kid out with a strapped arm, you're going to get another little kid trying to belt it. I know we haven't got much junior footy going on at the moment, but just cut the look out. I just think it's a bit of nonsense, really.
So a slap on the wrist with a feather in response from the AFL. Nice, Terry. Correct. So thanks to our healthcare workers in Victoria. Maccas are shouting any healthcare workers a free small McCafe hot drink or a medium soft drink until the 19th of August. And keep your requests coming for play-ons from our ad breaks. That was a request by Paul in North Ringwood. Sunday Bloody Sunday, you too. Thanks for that. 0433 98 11 16 if you'd like your song as a play-on from the ad break. As you heard in the news, they are bringing tighter restrictions in South Australia. It doesn't affect the crowd for tonight's game of AFL. So Port Adelaide and the Western Bulldogs tonight. Just reading from the report in the Adelaide Advertiser, it is still allowed to be a 25,000 crowd tonight. The story says likely to be cut from a maximum of 25,000 to 10,000 for future games, but tonight's game between Port Adelaide and the Western Bulldogs will not be affected by the new limit, which comes in tomorrow. So they get that game played tonight, which is, you know, if they've got a problem, you might consider reducing it, but they're not going to reduce it. It's still 25,000 for tonight, but it might be 10,000 for quite a while in the future. Two cases revealed in Adelaide on Sunday. The Advertiser reporting a teenager who arrived in Adelaide from Victoria didn't get tested until 5 days later, despite the rules being you get tested within 24 hours of arriving in the state. So that's from the Advertiser story that's just been posted. Terry Wallace is with us. He's coaches of the week for Stockdale and Lego. Bring more experience to the table. StockdaleLego.com.au.
Yes, Dwayne. And so for those who don't follow us on a regular basis, what I do is I give out of 10 for each coach for the round, but we have a look at then at who were the best three coaches in each particular round. The West Coast Geelong game, I said it was an absolute ripper. Both of those coaches voted high, but I ended up with my three coaches for this round being Damien Hardwick from Richmond, Alistair Clarkson, welcome back from Hawthorn, and the game that you did yesterday afternoon, Justin Longmuir, and the person that the coach that you spoke to in the past hour, Justin Longmuir, doing a pretty good job there at Fremantle.
Stockdale Lego, we see more than property. The MEGT Rookie of the Year, MEGT, your local apprenticeship experts.
So these are only first-year players, so it's a little bit different to the Rising Star, which can sort of nominate players who have played under 11 games. One vote this week, not much is going right over in Adelaide, but I'm liking the work of Shane McAdam. I think that he's showing, you know, he's a mature age player, 25, but showing that he's got a future at AFL level. Gave my two votes to Max King. People can sort of say, gee, not getting many kicks, but you know, still kicking his two or three goals a week, but what he's doing is he's breaking open packs and it's allowing, you know, the Greshams and Butlers of the world, Hind, guys like that to certainly be able to play the ball at ground level. So doing a really good job, Max King. Gave my three votes to Jack Mahoney. I think he's going along really nicely for North. Wouldn't be surprised if he gets a Rising Star nomination in the next couple of weeks. Very much deserving. Gave my four votes to Mitch Georgiades. Yeah, it was a ripper game and some very, very big moments in the game as well. I think if I was doing the Rising Star votes for this week, I'd give it to Georgiades off that performance. Although Mahoney's been doing it over a couple of weeks. It'll be one of the two I would think would probably get it. And my five votes goes for the second week in a row. I called him out last week when he played on Paddy Dangerfield, but Callum Sarong again for Fremantle, an outstanding performance once again. So he's been the five over 2 weeks in a row, and must very much be up in calculations now for that Rising Star Award.
Yeah, spot on, and Justin Longmuir supported that stance earlier on in the program. Everybody loves your footy golf, Terry.
He hit 16. Listen to the crowd.
They're going to go nuts when he hits this thing.
Lambert with a setup kick for Revolt. This is it.
Oh, wow. In your life, have you seen anything like that?
Fontapelli, the future star, the present star, steady.
And by the way, Terry's votes for the Rookie of the Year for MEGT, your local apprenticeship experts, called 13MEGT. Today, your footy golf, who performed the best, Terry?
Well, it was a bit of all or nothing in the early part of the round. There was damn big blowouts, Dwayne. So, it was quite interesting, but we had to get to the last game of the round, obviously, to get the best footy golf score of the round. So going all the way back to last Thursday night, Bulldogs a double bogey, just didn't really front up. Richmond and Eagle, particularly with the 10 players under the 30 games. Melbourne, a triple bogey. They really struggled, didn't they? And Port Adelaide and Eagle for putting them to the sword. A double bogey for Carlton and an Eagle for Hawthorn. A triple bogey for Essendon, only 3 goals for the game, and an Eagle for Brisbane. North Melbourne, an Eagle for the highest score of the year, and a quadruple bogey for Adelaide. That's as bad as what we've got so far for the season. St Kilda a birdie, Sydney a bogey. Par footy for the West Coast of Geelong, but as I sort of said, if I could have given an albatross for the style of play, I would have. Gold Coast a bogey, GWS a birdie, and then an albatross for Fremantle. Magnificent win and a triple bogey. Collingwood just could not afford to drop that game. So a triple bogey for the Magpies. So that is on top of, we put all this up on our social media platforms anyway, Dwayne, but on top of the list at 5 under is Port Adelaide and the mighty St Kilda Football Club, with Brisbane 1 stroke behind them on 4 under. And then we go all the way down 19 strokes to the bottom at plus 14 now is the Adelaide Football Club. They're 8 strokes off second last, which is the Hawks. So a long, long way off the pace.
Great to have you, Terry. Always fun to catch up with you for a McCafe coffee catch-up, and we'll do it again later on this week.
G'day, Dwayne. Again.
AFL Hall of Famer Terry Wallace joining us as a regular on the program. Back to your calls after a break. 1-300-736-736. The open line, thanks to Werribee Kia, 1-300-736-736. I'll read out a few of your texts as well. 0433-98-11-16. So your calls, your texts. Bob and Andy just warming up, not far away. Daniel Andrews' press conference is going to be on their program at around 3:15, we're told. And Andy is going to relive Carlton's disastrous Friday night. So plenty to come with them. But stick around. A few of your calls straight after the break.